Welcome to the Reader's Roundtable edition of Cattlecast with Jessica Trotter, Mari Garza, and Cheryl Lindemann.
Welcome back to Reader's Roundtable edition of Cattlecast. I'm Jessica Trotter, and I'm joined by Cheryl Lindemann and Mari Garza, and we are your primary selection team here at Cattle. Welcome, ladies.
Hello.
Hello.
Right in tune, yes. Okay. So, September. I don't know how it got here, but we are back to school. And back in classes and starting new experiences. And that's sort of where we started with our picks for today.
Yeah. I'm going to get started. So picture a little classroom of kindergartners, first day of school. The book I want to recommend is Mr. S by Monica Arnaldo. This is the most baffling, silly, fun book that you're going to want to read over and over again, not just to remember it, but to keep getting clues about the book itself. There's a kindergarten class that arrives to class on their first day, and they really can't figure out, you know, where the teacher is. And they notice that there's this sandwich on the desk. And what I'm going to say about the illustration, something that I really liked, is that there was a chalkboard. Like, are there even chalkboards in classrooms anymore? I don't even know. It didn't look exactly like the chalkboard from my childhood, but it did look like a big board that was at my friend's home. I remember we used to do our homework in the basement, but I digress. Anyway, so there's a sandwich on the desk, and on the chalkboard is written Mr. S. And you're like, was there someone here who like failed to, you know, finish writing their name? Or is that really the name of the teacher, Mr. S? So the kids are kind of going back and forth, like, you know, could we really have a teacher that's a sandwich? And, you know, some are like, yeah, sure, why not? You can have all sorts of teachers. And then it's like, come on, be real, blah, blah, blah. It's really cute. Now, I'm going to say that the first time I read this, I was really focusing on the words. And even the second time, I was really focusing on the words because I didn't really get the story that well. But there is, as in so many picture books, there are so many stories going on within a picture book. And there's a major secondary story going on that in some ways reminded me a little bit of like some of the weather-related drama that we've had in Michigan and across the country, but there's something going on. And at the end, I'm going to say that adults should be prepared to sort of be stumped a little bit, I think. And I think children, too, might be.
Yeah, but I think kids will love
it. But it's really a silly book, really, really a silly book. And I really like the mystery of it. And I have to say that with every reading, I learn a little bit more. So, Mr. S. the Sandwich, great job. Thanks for being a teacher.
It is a pretty fun and wacky book.
Yes, it is.
And the more literal and like adult and the less your inner child is active, you might be like, huh, what's going on? But I think kids will love the zaniness of it. And there's a little bit of like agency on behalf of the kids to sort of make things work with the sandwich teacher, which is really cool. Yes. And I like that because it's sort of like the kids can kind of figure it out even without a ton of guidance.
Yes, and there is so much going on in the pictures. Yeah. You really do have to look at the whole pictures.
And the pictures are really fun and bright and wonderful. So what do you have, Jessica, today?
So I actually have a picture book this time as well. I had a friend who shared this lovely book called My Teacher Has Tattoos by Darren Lopez. This is a book written from the experiences of a teacher in the D.C. area, Washington, D.C. area. He's sort of thinking back to his first years of teaching. He is somebody who grew up with tattoos, got tattoos as he aged, and it was important to him. But he kind of showing up in D.C. when he did, tattoos were very much associated with gangs and violence and jail and things like that. And So this book is a child kind of recognizing that his new teacher has tattoos, and he's been told that tattoos are bad, and only bad people have tattoos. And it really becomes a kind of a real look at stereotypes, and also kind of a step back and saying, okay, but there's lots of different reasons people have tattoos, and there's it can be just a straight-up artistic expression, but it's also kind of deeply cultural in many for many communities. But it really... It takes time with the children to have sort of step back and say there's misconceptions and there's stereotyping going on. And there's some really lovely discussion questions at the end of it. But the artwork is just beautiful. He sort of walks the kids through some of the reasons for his tattoos and the details in his. And it's the artwork is lovely. The message of understanding is, I think, is really important. I still run into people. I feel like they're more mainstream in a lot of ways, but I still kind of run into people who kind of turn their nose up, and I think it is a person's individual cultural or personal expression, and I think it's important that we kind of step back and realize that. But it also, it's a kind of a counterpoint to, I absolutely love Tell Me a Tattoo Story by Allison McGee, is an older picture book, where it's very much a child just sort of being told the stories of her parents' tattoos, as again, some of them are very much tied to the child's birth and sort of like that. So it's just, it moved me in a way, and I just really like this. So that was My Teacher Has Tattoos by Darren Lopez.
Wonderful. Really great pictures, I agree. Just very charming. I'm moving into adult books now and taking the idea of education beyond the classroom and into really a story, a memoir about a woman who wants to be an astronomer and an astrophysicist, and that really painstaking process of having a dream that's really big and really challenging like that, and how to get there in the midst of life, which is filled with your own troubles, perhaps family troubles, things going on in the world, and how to make it through and achieve a goal like that. So the book is Starstruck, a memoir of astrophysics and finding light in the dark by Serafina El-Badri Nance. And Serafina started out a really strong student. She had really, honestly, very pushing parents. She was pushed very hard, studying on breaks when everybody else was having fun, pushed to do both tennis and academics, sent to a private school 45 minutes from their home, where they had to get up at the crack of dawn to travel from Austin, where they lived, out to a private school, because her parents really wanted her to excel. And she had an inclination towards English, and really not towards math and science. It was actually very challenging for her. But early on, she got this spark. She liked Star Talk, I think is what it was called, the radio program was on PBS, public radio program. And she would listen to that in the car. And anyway, this is really about her journey to develop those math and science skills and to fight sort of misogyny and sexism within the industry. She was told early on she was so excited there was going to be an astronomy presentation at her school. And the man that came was real grumpy with her and basically said, yeah, there aren't that many girl astronomers. This really isn't for you. And she's like, oh, yeah, there's a challenge right there. I'm going to do this. And so it's that process. And why this really fits with our theme, I think, is there are some really amazing teachers in this book. There's a fifth grade teacher that helps her with her mental health as well. She really suffers from anxiety. Her parents have a very tumultuous relationship. She has a tumultuous relationship with her mother, who's an Egyptian-American woman who's really struggling. This is post 9/11. And there's a lot of racism that Serafina experiences, but especially her mother, and a lot of turmoil in Egypt at the time with her mother's family. So there's a lot going on here. And through this whole book, she has pretty severe anxiety. And it's sort of managing that and being resilient in the face of that. I won't give away everything because it's just one of those fantastic memoirs that unrolls beautifully. In fact, she says at the end she's not a nonfiction reader, and this was hard for her to write, but she she should do more because she's got the art. She loves fantasy, but she has the gift of writing. So Starstruck by Serafina El-Badri Nance, an excellent book.
Very cool.
Well, I have a book that is not necessarily about going back to school, but because, every year children are growing in their reading skills. And this next book is called The Skull by John Klassen. Clayson. It's kind of like an early chapter book, and I'm going to say it's slightly dark. You have got a little girl who is running in the woods. It's snowing. It's cold. She's trying to get away from something. You never find out what it is. But she gets to this big house. Think like Alps, maybe Germany, Austria, you know. It's this big house, and she knocks, and there's this little skull that shows up in the window. And it turns out the skull is not attached to a skeleton. So this is a bit of a retelling of a folk tale. But one of the things that you get to do with folk tales is kind of have different endings or do different, you know, kind of add some twists and turns here and there. It is, I think, telling that you get to see how both Attila and the skull get to help each other. Visit the dungeon, get rid of the headless skeleton that does show up. It's kind of, like I said earlier, a little bit eerie, but I really like how it kind of challenges that reader who is looking to step up their reading challenge a bit and enter stories that maybe go to places they haven't been to before. So that's The Skull, a Tylerian folktale by John Clayson.
Cool. Very cool. And I just love John Clayson's artwork. Yeah. I mean, just, yeah.
You can't go wrong.
Pretty much, yeah. Now. I took a lighter angle for me and in terms of the book. My next book is actually Promposal, which is a teen. Sort of coming of age, a little bit of a romance, but mostly it's about, it's Promposal by Rachel Garrett. It's just sort of, we have Autumn Reeves. She is an overachieving high school senior with a plan. She wants to become a high-end event planner. And as part of the plan, she wants to attend the best business school in Michigan, which is a made-up one, just so I'm just telling you right now. It's not one that I believe exists. And she's already actually won a scholarship even, but she finds out the same day that her boyfriend dumps her, because that's the way life works in these kinds of stories, that she has been waitlisted. She did not get in.
Ooh.
And she also, unbeknownst to her parents, did not apply anywhere else.
Oh.
She was the least supposed to, this is my one little issue with the book. She was supposed to apply to MSU, but she didn't do it. I'm like, come on. I'm an MSU grad. Just saying. To be fair, I am also a U of M grad, but that's an entirely different thing. She was supposed to apply to MSU. What she decides to do is try to push her way. Those heartbreaking hours of just reacting to the letter, she actually reopens it and realizes that there was a button where she can add, it says, is there any information that you could add that would help us with your, you know, decision? And she decides she is going to try to create a business, a successful business, in no time at all, to get their attention and get herself bumped into the accepted group. So she creates something called Promposal Queen, offering epic prom proposals to Detroit area high school students. But to make it work, she needs the help of her arch nemesis, because, you know, in high school you can have an arch nemesis, Makai Winston, who is going to help her get her business plan up and running and helping her with her proposals. And there's a lot of history between them. There's a lot of extra characters to hear about. And it's a fun, interesting story, and you know it's going to end somewhat well because it is a teen romance, and they tend to. But it's a twist road to get there, and I just admire their, on some level, togetherness. I mean, I know she very much just had her plan and didn't really have a backup plan, but she also, the drive to try and, you know, I have this thing I want to do, and here are some ways maybe we can get to it in a different direction, is actually really interesting to see.
Yeah, that's cool.
I'd suggest it. It was a fun one.
Is she a Michigan author?
Yes, Detroit area.
Okay, cool.
Yep.
Awesome.
Yep.
Great. Wow.
I'm going to go back again to adult nonfiction.
Yep.
And again, a little bit of an abstract interpretation of our theme, but not too much because it goes really
squarely fits
education.
Mm-hmm.
But on more of a college level. The book is How to Think Like a Woman by Regan Penaluna, Four Women Philosophers Who Taught Me How to Love the Life of the Mind. And it has just an amazingly fantastic, but also sort of distressing cover, sort of a Victorian-ish era woman that, you know, with a book, but she has this, her face is just completely wrapped up with some sort of fabric. It almost looks like a meringue on her head. And I was like, what is this book all about? I couldn't wait to pick it up. And it was an absolutely phenomenal read. In this book, Regan Penaluna tells her, it's a combination of memoir, women's history, and the history and philosophical history, a little social criticism, feminist analysis, basically all combined into one. But in her personal story, Regan grows up in a rural area and ends up going to college and falling in love with philosophy. It felt like just this world opened up. She was always really a deep thinker. And when she discovers Western philosophy in college, she's like, this is it. You know, this speaks to me. I've always wanted to think like this. I can sit in classrooms and talk to people about these huge ideas. But as time goes on and the more she delves into it, she actually pursues a PhD, which she gets in philosophy and is awarded the PhD and earns it. However, she starts to realize, wait a minute, where are all the women? You know, literally, you know, the big book on philosophy that they all use as sort of the gold standard, there's just a few women in it. She learns that only 25% of, you know, women, there are women in academia in philosophy. Out of all the humanities, it's probably the lowest percentage of women. And then she goes through the canon of everything she's learned and is like, oh my gosh, there really are no women. And not only are there no women, but when you examine all those philosophers that we think about, you know, Aristotle, Plato, you name it, you go through, when she examines and looks into it, there's stories of how they treated women, what they thought about women. I mean, going way, way back in Western philosophy is sobering would be one word, infuriating would be another word.
Mm-hmm.
I must say that I was a political philosophy major, so this book really kind of touched me because honestly, I was in college in the 90s, didn't really even think about it.
Right.
And it was one of those paradigm shifts I had reading this book where I was like, where we are as a culture, where I am as a person now, I am receptive to this in a way that I didn't even think about this back then,
mm-hmm.
which was, I don't know, one of those weird light bulb moments. It was kind of uncomfortable in a way. But what she does is she delves into, okay, what is going on here, and looks for women philosophers and starts studying them. So she focuses on four: Mary Estelle, Damaris Masham, Catherine Cockburn, and one that you've heard of, Mary Wollstonecraft, the mother of Mary Shelley. And she does pretty short bios on all of them, but she also has this fantastic chapter called Bedtime Stories where she does this sweeping, you know, couple paragraphs on all sorts of philosopher women throughout world history, actually. So there's a lot going on here. There's the personal stories, there's the philosophical history, and there's just this really changes her life and changes her into another direction and the sort of reckoning with where are we at with women in academia in general, not just in philosophy. So an extremely rich book, one of my favorite reads of the year, How to Think Like a Woman by Regan Penaluna.
Very cool.
Wow.
Okay. All right, that's our picks for this episode. Happy reading, everyone.
Happy reading and happy back to school.
Yeah.